This is the Schnitt Show.
All right, hello and welcome. Hour three of Schnitt Show. Our phone number 800-801-8999. I'm Casey O'Day in for Todd. Another hour today and then tomorrow. And then Todd will return triumphant on Monday. Triumphant of what? I don't know, but it sounded good. So, man, it sucks to be the cool mom, doesn't it? You see this crazy story, this woman in California? A California mom hosted depraved secret sex parties where she handed teens booze and condoms and even watched them and instructed them while they engaged in sexual acts. Shannon O'Connor watched and laughed in a bedroom while a drunk teenage boy mounted and groped a girl who was a friend of the woman's then 15-year-old son. The 47-year-old mom kept the party secret from other parents and even her husband, while 14 and 15-year-old kids got so drunk that they, and this is a quote from one of the kids, would vomit, be unable to stand, and fall unconscious. Prosecutor says it took a lot of brave children to come forward and untangle this deeply disturbing case. The O'Connor stated that if anyone was told she could go to jail, yeah, that's true. One 14-year-old girl who spoke about the parties was threatened with retaliation that would include people spreading rumors about her at school. Man, you know, the cool mom, back in the day, the cool mom, and it was my buddy Travis's mom. I'm going to get anyone in trouble. I had several Travis friends, so don't try to research that. She was the cool mom, and she was, because she had the attitude that, look, these jackasses are going to take their trucks, they're going to drive up the mountains in Wyoming there, they're going to find some clearing, some park up there, and that's where they're going to sit there and drink beer, and then they're going to try to drive off the mountain. Whereas really our policy was to go up there and camp and do that. But her theory was, you know what, just go down the basement, whatever, but nobody leaves. Didn't have all of this attached to it, though, so I'd be surprised. She probably won't even get that much jail time. It's California. Everything is crazy, man. All right. Here's the story I said I was going to talk about, and then I got a little distracted earlier. So in Seattle, Washington, they call it a pumpkin parade. All right. So in Seattle, Washington, the school districts there are canceling pumpkin parades. These are held at elementary schools. The Halloween-themed party at Benjamin Franklin Elementary School in Seattle has been canceled, with administrators arguing that it marginalizes people of color. Following 5 years of deliberation about the future of the school's annual pumpkin parade, which was very popular, the school decided to nix the tradition on the advice of the racial equity team. Of course. Of course you have a racial equity team, and of course they want you to get rid of. Now, do you know why? Maybe you're theorizing. Do you know why that this falls outside of racial equity? Historically, the pumpkin parade marginalizes students of color who do not celebrate the holiday, said a spokesperson. Specifically, these students have requested to be isolated on campus while the event took place. In alliance with the Seattle Public School's unwavering commitment to students of color, specifically African-American males, the staff is committed to supplanting the pumpkin parade with more inclusive and educational opportunities during the school day. All right, so in place of the pumpkin parade, students at the school may participate in autumnal work. Is that even a word? I guess it's a word. Thematic units of study about the fall where they can, quote, share all the cozy feelings of the season. I know what this is. I watched this garbage go down in a school district in Minnesota when I was up there years ago. They called it, they wanted to, with the fall holidays, they didn't want to get Thanksgiving, Christmas, obviously. Oh, can't talk about Christmas. And then Halloween. And so what they did is they repackaged the whole thing as nature seasons. Yeah, the whole sharing all the cozy feelings of the seasons, nature seasons. They had like a stupid song, all of this. And the kids were crushed because they were excited. They're going to go, they're going to get two shots at the candy, man. Get there at the at the school, you get the parade, there's candy involved there, and then later, man, now you get to go harass the neighborhood and see what you can score there. The Halloween events creates a situation where some students must be excluded for their beliefs. But you know what? I remember we had a couple kids in my school who didn't do Halloween, and it was a religious thing. No, we would give them candy though. Go ahead and give them candy. One of the guys who didn't do candy was actually a friend of mine. I think there was Mormon. His family was Mormon. You know, in Wyoming, you have a lot of people, Mormon people up there too. And yeah, for whatever reason, I never explained, because I admittedly, I don't know enough fully about the faith to know exactly why they found it objectionable. But yeah, he had no problem scoring candy because he had buddies. We'd take care of him, whatever. Yes, but Halloween creates a situation where some students must be excluded for beliefs, financial status, or life experience. Costume parties often become an uncomfortable event for many children, and they distract students and staff from learning. All right, the financial status is the one I usually hear. We were poor, man. Now we were not as poor as some, but we were pretty poor growing up. And because my parents separated, with my mom and four kids just scrounging the whole deal. And yes, you know, you have some family autonomy with coming from cattle ranch family, but it's, I don't know how to describe. So the idea that you were going to go out and necessarily buy some badass costume, which, you know, probably this year we're talking about a bunch of Squid Game people or something. Yeah, that probably wasn't going to happen. Or you could buy little pieces of it. But, you know, putting a costume together was not that difficult. You could do it. As a kid, you could go into a thrift store and make it happen with just, you know, random stuff around there. And if people don't want to participate in it, then they don't have to participate in it. They need to ruin it for everybody. Halloween, I'm telling you, every year we got some story. I told you the story yesterday about the woman who did the gravestones because she lives in a house where three people were murdered decades ago. And she lives in the murder house, so she wants to do it. I'll tell you another one that I remember distinctly when I was a kid, or I was in high school. Yeah, I was in high school. I was 16 probably. Yes, I would have been 16 because I could drive that across state lines. So where I grew up in Wyoming, it's only about 40 miles north to the Montana border, right there, Bighorn Mountains, and then right up there. And then once you cross into Montana for about 20 miles, it's an Indian reservation. It's the Crow Indian Reservation up there. And that particular reservation houses a town called Hardin, Montana. And Hardin, Montana is where the Battle of Little Bighorn was, right? Custer's Last Stand, all of that. And I'm a history nerd, so I love all this stuff. And actually, that spawned a bunch of other stuff with the forts there, and eventually what happened up at Dull Knife Reservoir, and it's a whole thing. But what drove people nuts is there was a guy who had a house that was visible from the interstate, because it's I-90 that goes through there. Right after 90 and 25 connect and then head north. And in his yard, and he would have been Native American, obviously living on the reservation, he had a bunch of mannequins, and he had like four or five of the mannequins on the ground, and they were in old frontier soldier outfits. And then he had two other mannequins that were dressed in Native American garb, holding wigs to represent scalps. I thought it was funny. But peep, I remember the Billings Gazette ran a story of the Sheridan Press down in Sheridan, Wyoming. They're like, you can't do that. Why? Why? That's good for you, man. There's nobody alive who remembers that. It's a historical thing. And you went through trouble to put it up there. I thought it was funny. But of course, anything having to do with Halloween, there's going to be a group of butthurt people somewhere, man. Every single time. All right, 800-801-8999. We got the Neil deGrasse Tyson audio. Speaking of people who are buzzkills. Got that to go? All right. So Neil deGrasse Tyson was on CNN. He was with Anderson Cooper, and they were talking. They were first talking about their, Shatner, obviously. Right, Neil deGrasse Tyson, space dude, all that. And then he got into, and I thought this was interesting, they went into a conversation about the footage of unidentified aerial phenomena, and specifically those videos that the U.S. Navy had. You saw those, right? Don't know what's going on there. Crazy stuff, right? Who knows? And for whatever reason, like the whole discussion about whether that could be aliens or anything, seems to, Neil deGrasse Tyson ain't buying it. This guy's buzz-killing it. Here is Neil deGrasse Tyson. We got the... Good to go on the audio? All right, well, hold on. Let me do this. I'm going to take a break. We'll come back, and we will get into the Neil deGrasse Tyson cut. It is next here on Schnitt.
SchnittShow.com.
Can listen to
Schnitt.
All right. We got all our ducks in a row. We're good. Actually, producer Andrew and I were just off the air. We were sitting there and we were sharing all the weird Halloween stories because there's always some weird ones. Like, we had one last year where a guy actually got shot and then he crawled into a yard and died on Halloween. And people were walking by him and stuff because there was a bunch of other stuff in the yard. So you got to wonder, like, were people walking by going, oh, wow, look how real that looks. That's amazing. And then where we would go, we'd have to drive into town, but where we'd go trick-or-treating, the good neighborhood, when I was a kid, they had this couple. The woman was a friend of my mom's, and she loved Halloween because what she would do every year is she had this very, very, very authentic looking old timey Disney style witch, like the whole setup. She'd put paint on so she looked like a mannequin and she could hold perfectly still. And they had right outside the front door of their house, they have like, you know, bench for sitting out there and then some plants and all that. And then they'd have skeletons up and a bunch of other stuff. And then she'd just be sitting there just in arm's length of where kids would stand when they were knocking on the door to get candy from her husband. And right, you know, at the appropriate moment, she'd reach out and grab the kids, man. And they would lose their minds. It was amazing. I remember being older and actually being over at the house while that was happening. Watching these kids just get terrified. And I don't know if she took more joy in that or what it was. But anyway. All right. So anyway, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Here we go.
Before we go.
Hold on. Just the reset in case somebody's just joining us. So Tyson is on with Anderson Cooper. They're talking about space, Shatner's trip, all that. Cooper turns the thing to, hey, what about those videos of, well, we don't know, unexplained aerial phenomena from the Navy, right? And what do you think's going on there? Do you think aliens are visiting? And Neil deGrasse Tyson is just a big old wet blanket. Here we go.
Briefly before we go, all these unidentified craft that have been seen, Where do you stand on this?
Well, it's not a matter of stance. It's I've said this before. Just look at, by the way, there are 3 billion smartphones in the world, and each one can take a high resolution color video or still picture. And the best evidence we're looking at is monochromatic fuzzy Tic Tacs on a Navy screen. That's really, we are crowdsourcing any visitor to Earth. I'm looking for better data than that.
But, I mean, the pilots, I interviewed one of the pilots, they seem completely credible, and
I'm
the
not
things they saw are
people
crazy.
People aren't credible? You know what? As a scientist, you know what the criterion is? Are they human? That's all that matters.
Uh-huh.
If you're human and you see something astonishing, sure. You hear them speak of it, and they're pilots, and they're used to seeing bogeys, and yes, they'll be astonished. That doesn't mean they know what it is. Just because you don't know what it is,
okay,
doesn't mean you know what it is.
All right.
That's what you're saying. And by the way, I think when the aliens come, you don't need fuzzy video to be pointing to. We'll all know, okay? Just telling you.
Well, maybe or maybe not. I mean, so Tyson's of the opinion that should aliens ever arrive, it's going to be like Independence Day, and you're like, you know, the clouds will clear, and then something the size of Texas is over you. What? I don't know. A lot of times when this is in human nature, when people explore and, you know, they do something called scouting. So that's a thing. I mean, I don't know. And I don't think the Navy pilots, by the way, were claiming that they knew what it was. I think their point was they didn't know what it was, and it was so damn odd. So I don't even understand Tyson's point. Just because you don't know doesn't mean you know. They didn't claim to know. They actually claimed that they didn't know. So just a little different. All right. This Loudoun, I'm going to have to touch on this in the last half hour here. So this story about Loudoun County Schools up there in D.C., I told you about this earlier in the week. You had this parent going back to June who was really the face of, look how out of control these parents are, as he's being dragged out of the school board meeting, his lips all busted up. And in reality, he wasn't just your standard run-of-the-mill, I don't like CRT guy, critical race theory. He was a dude who was incensed because the district said that there was no sexual assaults. And there were no issues that happened with their transgender bathroom policy. When in reality, this guy's ninth grade daughter said that she was raped. Said that she was raped by a male student wearing a skirt who came in the girl's bathroom who is gender fluid. And when I say raped, I don't mean there was, you know, there was sex that happened and there was an age difference. The charges and the allegations that this student who then apparently did it again, allegedly, at another school here back in early October, they include forcible rape, sodomy. So, I mean, just ran the gamut. And the school district said, well, no, nothing like that's ever happened around here. So that's what Dad was mad about. Well, this story just got a whole lot worse for the district. A whole lot worse. We'll turn our attention to that and much more in the final half hour of Schnitt. Hang on.
The Schnitt Show. Schnitt Show.
Yeah, something tells me this isn't going to be the only version of this garbage article that we'll see. Bloomberg Business Week. How to deal with an anti-vaxxer at a holiday dinner. So, who do they bring in? The guy by the name who's interviewed in this article, Chip Massey, former FBI hostage negotiator, here to give you tips how to deal with your anti-vaxxer relative. First thing he says, get inside your mind. Facts will not work. I've seen very well-meaning people come armed, which is an interesting word, right, with logic and science to go against red hat wearers. Hey, I got news for you, Chip Massey or whatever, former FBI negotiator. I think it's adorable that you assume that everyone who is quote-unquote an anti-vaxxer is some MAGA hat dude. And if you're not convinced of that, I would encourage you to look to demographic breakdowns in places like New York City, where you have vaccination rates among minority communities in the 30th percentile. And maybe head out to California, too, and talk to some of these moms who are not down with vaccines at all, let alone this one. But whatever. You know what? I'm going to condense all this. I was going to read some of this garbage to you because he's like, oh, what you want to do is you want to plan collaborative activities so you can talk. So maybe put a puzzle together or do Legos. How about no? How about you just maybe I got this. How about you just not talk about that? Talk about anything else. Maybe don't be the person who's going to come and pick a fight or be the person who's going to exclude several individuals when you're the one who is wanting to host holiday dinners for people so you can make a point. How about that? Does that sound good? Okay. That's all I can stand to that article. So let me get over to this Loudoun County thing. All right. So we mentioned going back to with that father who said his ninth grade daughter was raped in a bathroom by a gender fluid student and got very, very upset when they said there's been no issues with the new transgender bathroom policy that they had there. Well, obviously he felt there was an issue because that student. The student who is accused of rape is a male student. Sometimes he's female student, sometimes not either, I guess. I don't know how the fluidity works for this particular individual. However, based on physical characteristics, previously would not have been allowed in the girls' bathroom where this assault was said to have taken place. By the way, New York Post wrote about this and didn't point out anything about the student who was accused or where it happened. It was amazing. They could do that whole article. They did it in the local section, and then they left out all of those details. But it's amazing, but it's not surprising. So here's where it starts to get worse. So they were saying that there had been zero issues with sexual assault. Well, according to new documents, Loudoun County Public Schools did not record multiple known incidents of alleged sexual assault in schools dating back several years, despite a law that requires statistics about school safety incidents to be reported to the public, and which includes provisions holding school superintendents personally liable for violations. After reporters raised the discrepancy with the Virginia Department of Education, spokesperson Charles Pyle said the VDOE is reviewing the discipline, crime, and violence data submissions of Loudoun County Public Schools and is in communications with the schools to determine whether the reporting is accurate and whether the division is in compliance with state and federal law. Well, they know it's not accurate because they've talked to several students, or parents, rather, of students who have made those allegations. And the same law could have implications for the Loudoun superintendent or principal in the wake of a May 28 alleged sexual assault in a bathroom on June 22nd, Superintendent Scott, that's the one I just told you about. On June 22nd, Superintendent Scott Ziegler told the public, "To my knowledge, we don't have any record of assaults occurring in our restrooms." That's what Dad heard. Dad said, "Aw, hell no, you don't," and then he showed up at the meeting. Virginia law requires that reports shall be made to the division superintendent, to the principal, or his designee on all incidents involving allegations of sexual assault. The Daily Wire reporter, Daily Wire is the one who actually broke this story, by the way. They asked the school district questions last week, including, has Stonebridge ever reported the May alleged sexual assault in any statistics or made anyone aware of it? At which point the school district hid behind the law, saying any information related to student information is confidential, which is partially true, except when you get into blind statistical information, which once it's reported, because it's supposed to report it, be reported, becomes public record. But, you know, they just they don't want this headache. However, state law actually requires statistics on assaults and other incidents in schools to be reported to the public in the form of annual updated statistics available on public databases housed by the Virginia Department of Education. So they're lying again. Yeah, this is a big deal. You have multiple sexual assault allegations. Again, were there sexual assaults? Maybe, right? You got to go to court. You got to adjudicate it. I understand that. That's why this student is alleged to have sexually assaulted this man's daughter and then alleged to have assaulted another student at the next school they put him over to. However, it's more than that. See, in October of 2018, a case that was widely reported by the media at the time, three football players at Tuscarora High were arrested and charged with sexual assault. A source told local media that it's believed a younger player was held down by teammates who inserted objects in the victim. This happened in a locker room. A spokesman for Loudoun County Schools at the time said the case will be subject to disciplinary action. However, the annual report that year reported zero instances of sex offenses against students. So the school, going back, has been doing this for years, and even though a very, very well-documented story that caused outrage in the community, where a teammate was held down and had objects inserted into him, was left off. The point I'm making with that is it's not just the salacious nature of it, but more importantly, it's so easy to research and determine that they were doing this almost instantly. Right? You can't hide that. The schools provided no response to the question about the reason for the zero figures either. And while the suspect in the May 28th alleged assault was not arrested until July 8th following the conclusion of the investigation, officers were present at the school that day. Law enforcement was notified of the incident, and a police report was filed on the attack. Pyle, the state spokesman, noted that the mandatory reporting is not contingent on the filing of charges by law enforcement or subsequent convictions, meaning if the allegation is made, then it needs to be reported. There's a separate line once from there where you can individually break down what happened. Additionally, the safety statistics for that school year were not due to the state until July 16th. And in the case of the Tuscarora incident, the school year did not end until months after the incident and arrest, yet the district still reported zero and has every year since. So, you know, what started as some parents upset over CRT curriculum and an attitude that was indefensible on the part of board members culminated in eventually them providing one of the examples utilized for a letter demanding the DOJ and Department of Homeland Security start treating this as domestic terrorism because parents are upset, has now come back and bit them big time in this school district. And if there's any justice, something will be done. However, it is Virginia, and frankly, after the fact that the governor is still the governor there, I don't know what the hell's going on. So, just depends, I guess, on your politics more than anything else. All right, one more segment to go. We'll get into it. Got two or three stories to fit in. We'll do it next here on Schnitt.
Schnitt Show. Click on the Schnitt list every day at schnittshow.com.
More than 100,000 workers have threatened strikes as unions flex their muscles. Unfortunately, whoever wrote this report for The Hill just can't seem to figure out what they may be upset about. I told you earlier this week about how there was a vote by the nurses of Kaiser Permanente, which is a huge healthcare provider out on the West Coast, who have overwhelmingly voted to authorize strikes and are preparing to join the picket line unless they get stronger collective bargaining. And there's a host of other issues that they've seemingly failed to mention in this story, like the vaccine mandate issue. John Deere factory workers, Hollywood production crew members, the IATSE union, all threatening to strike. 2,000 New York hospital workers, 700 Massachusetts nurses, 1,400 Kellogg plant workers, and the list goes on and on and on. It is a definitive strike while the iron's hot operation. And here's the thing. We get in the union discussion. I don't have a beef with public unions. I mentioned there are private unions. Mentioned that it's public unions that I find very problematic because of because it is the elected officials themselves who will then cave into it for the support that it brings about for them. I guess would be the best way to say that. But that's not the point of this. The point is you know, there's a lot of turmoil right now, and yes, if you are a worker, and there's a bunch of people who aren't working, well, that's supply and demand. So inherently, you are in a better situation. You're in a situation where you can say, "Hey, all right, that's fine. You're behind on orders. You can't find workers. You can't find people to keep up with the manufacturing needs." Then maybe now's the time that we're going to extract a little more from you. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. I just like how they wrote a whole story here and never once in the story mentioned anything about people who are upset about mandates having to do with vaccines, which is an issue that has been raised in multiple instances here. Are you following this story too? I know it's been almost a year to the day that big tech censored the New York Post bombshell reporting on Hunter Biden. labeling in some instances. It's obviously Russian disinformation. Well, we know it's not. We still don't know who the big guy is, but we have some ideas. Here's where things get a little weirder, though. So emails from Hunter Biden's laptop have now revealed that the father and son were sharing at least one bank account and actually were paying each other's bills and making deposits in there. It's a great way if you kind of want to intermingle money, but you don't necessarily want it trackable to a single individual. And it's also really important because if you remember the one time that you did get Biden answering questions about this, he specifically said that he never talked with Hunter about business dealings. Well, if you have a shared business bank account and you're both utilizing it, which that you know that happened, and you're both receiving statements on it and you're making decisions in it, that's, I don't know, that sounds like talking about business. But that's just me because, you know, I tend to understand what words mean. So when you get into commingling of funds, what does that mean if there is an investigation? Because there is an investigation right now from a Hunter Biden perspective. And if they're digging through bank accounts and business bank accounts as part of the Hunter Biden investigation, and part of that investigation involves a business account that is a signatory for both Hunter Biden and the President of the United States, I think one would have to wonder how the DOJ and Merrick Garland, specifically the president's appointed attorney general, how they feel that they don't have some sort of conflict of interest there. And why aren't more people asking that question? These are legit. Those are legitimate questions. Look, there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown around like you have a conflict of interest. And a lot of times I dismiss it because at the end of the day, everyone's going to have a little partisan feel to them. But, you know, you can watch people who genuinely do their job, especially as it pertains to investigations, law enforcement, stuff like that. So just nose to the grindstone. They probably have opinions, and you get a few beers in them, and you'd be shocked by what they say. That being said, it's the appearance of impropriety. And if you have an investigation that literally is looking into a bank account that is the President of the United States, I mean, why am I the only one bringing this up? Hell, the bank account having to do with Donald Trump was a big discussion point, and it was the prosecutor in New York, the Attorney General of New York, who literally campaigned on the fact that she was going to go over that, saying that a fair investigation going back to Deutsche Bank, specifically was the bank, and his dealings and the dealings with Deutsche Bank and Donald Trump were not something that the DOJ would be thoroughly able to investigate because the evil DOJ was under the evil control of evil Trump and his evil attorney general. So all of the arguments that should be being made here, and actually even more so because in this case there already is an active investigation, are just largely being ignored. In fact, the former ethics chief from the Obama administration actually slammed the White House over Hunter Biden's art sales just a week ago, saying that buyers could use them to gain influence with his dad. That's almost a minor issue compared to what you're talking about here. If you had business dollars that moved in, and those dollars were pay-for-play influence dollars, and they literally went into a bank account with the President of the United States' name on it at the time, or excuse me, the Vice President at the time, I don't know how you look at that and don't think it's at the least interesting. Sketchy is probably the right word, and possibly criminal is another way you could describe that. So we'll see. And then finally, real quick, this story. I think this is funny. The Massachusetts State Archives says it has recovered a letter that had been written by Alexander Hamilton and stolen by a kleptomaniac cataloger. The letter written by Hamilton to Continental Army General Marquis de Lafayette, a French aristocrat, dated to 1780. Aristocrat, not cat. That's a Disney movie. And like I said, it was stolen by a kleptomaniacal, I am so glad it's the end of the show. You have no idea. Kleptomania. Guy likes to steal stuff. Cataloger. Ah! Anyway, and so they got... So that, I'm assuming there's a map on the back of that. We need some lemon juice, right? That's, isn't this the plot from the National? No? Okay. All right. So anyway, they got it back, but whatever. All right, I got to roll, and I'll learn to talk, and I'll join you back here tomorrow on Schnitt. See ya.
The Schnitt Show.